Good Weekend Talks is a new podcast from the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age.
It's a deep dive, once a week, into Australia's definitive stories.
On Good Weekend Talks,
we take a long-form look at the people,
places and issues
that matter to you.
Devour the issue in depth.
And learn the backstory and craft behind some of Good Weekend's most popular pieces.
It's your favourite magazine, brought to life for your ears, your heart and your soul.
Subscribe now, wherever you get your podcasts.
From the newsrooms of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, this is Please Explain. I'm Tori Maguire and it is Wednesday, April 8. For the duration of the COVID-19 crisis, Please Explain is coming to you 5 days a week. As of this afternoon, Australia has recorded 5,997 cases of coronavirus and 50 people have died. I'm joined now by Eric Bagshaw. Eric is officially our China correspondent, but is currently marooned in the Canberra Press Gallery. Eric Bagshaw, welcome back to Please Explain.
Good to be with you, Tori.
Tell us about the modelling that was released yesterday.
Well, this is the modelling that we're all waiting for in many ways. We've been asking about it for weeks, and it was meant to tell us really just how the virus was going to play out in Australia, and in particular, some of the efforts that might have been taken by the government to make sure that it didn't reach the kind of catastrophic levels we've seen in places like China, Italy, and the US. It really showed what we had averted and what didn't happen here. There was a series of numbers under the worst case scenario was we would have seen about 35,000 people trying to get into intensive care per day. That would have totally overwhelmed the intensive care system, which is now at about 5,000 to 7,000 beds. And basically, we've ended up in a situation now which is almost unrecognizable from what the modeling was showing at the start of this pandemic, where up to 90% of the population could have been infected, basically, if the government just had allowed the virus to run wild. We're now looking at a situation where, you know, in a worst case scenario, we could see up to 20,000 people die. But again, that is a worst case scenario and unlikely to actually occur here. And really what the modelling showed is that Australia's efforts are working pretty well. Now, the critical thing is here, the government is doing more modelling and it's going to show what the expected forecast virus growth rate in Australia is likely to be over the coming months. And that's really going to be the important one. We'll probably see that within the next couple of weeks. And that's going to show how long really they expect these measures to be in place for. And more importantly, perhaps when they might start to think about some of these social distancing measures that we've all been living with start to kind of come off.
Because that's the question everyone is asking from an emotional, economic, professional, personal perspective, is how long do we have to live like this? And also, how long is the economy going to have to be in this hibernation? Because the federal government's enormous suite of measures to get us through this are all based on 6 months of spending. While, yes, I guess they could turn the tap back on and extend it, that is not an ideal scenario. Is there any indication yet, Eric, from any of the people doing these numbers on how long this is going to last?
Look, I think really from the moment the government received this modelling, and this is some months ago now, really at the start of the infection starting to come into Australia, we were told 6 months. And that's still the timeline that they're working with. But I think they're managing expectations and saying, you know, at least some forms of social distancing and restrictions on mass gatherings and restrictions on places like pubs and clubs and other social events are likely to be in place for at least 6 months. And I think we have to adjust to that new normal, because the great risk is that if you take these measures off too early, you do run the risk of the infection rate flaring up again. And the people who ran the modelling, Doherty Institute, probably Australia's top infectious disease specialists, they made that warning yesterday. You know, they were very clear that what we are doing at the moment is working, it is saving lives. And if we were to somehow release some of those restrictions early, it could imperil large numbers of Australians. And there is simply no point taking that risk, because the economic consequences of those health risks are far greater than what we are seeing now.
It seems to me, Eric, that all of our political leaders at both federal and state level and the chief medical officers are all really concerned about the Easter long weekend, because Scott Morrison and Brendan Murphy have been relatively upbeat for the last week or so in congratulating Australians for, you know, flattening the curve, for cooperating. But in the last 24 hours, they've both just begged and pleaded with people not to muck it up this weekend, and so have the state premiers. How worried are they about everyone just getting to Easter and going, bugger it, I need to see my family, and getting in the car?
Well, they've got to sort of, you know, tread this very careful line between congratulating the public, saying, yes, what we're doing is working really well, we've flattened the curve, but let's not get complacent. And I think that's really kind of understandable, and getting the message across that you can't sneak through, you know, police lines or sneak into coastal communities or try and, you know, sort of get away for a weekend to enjoy yourself with family and friends down the coast is critical for that reason, because so many people usually do it. And it's about breaking the habits that we've had for so long and is a part of normal life, and just explaining to people that this is not a normal time. But by and large, Australians have been pretty good at complying with these rules and regulations. If there is a momentary lapse, it does risk undoing that, because as we've seen with things like weddings and other sporting events, those are the major sort of super spreading events that they're scared of, where you get 30 or 40 people hanging around and all of a sudden a large number of people have the disease. And that's exactly what they want to avoid when we finally have appeared to, you know, really start flattening the curve.
It's interesting, the New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian this morning said something that was quite different to her recent rhetoric. She's been very pessimistic over the recent weeks and saying, you know, this is our new normal, we might be able to lift it one day. But this morning she actually said what they're going to do is look at, she said there's a difference between social distancing and restrictions, and that while, yes, we will have to maintain social distancing for a very long time, and basically until there's a vaccine, that we may not have to maintain the restrictions at the level that they're at. And they are going to review them month by month, and that it is possible that at the beginning of May, there might be a slight lift in things like restrictions on exercise, maybe even some of the restrictions about cafes and things. Is there any sense from the National Cabinet or the federal side of things of what they're considering coming out of this slowly might look like?
Well, this has been the sort of framework that they've been keen to emphasise, at least for the past few weeks, and that is the restrictions are a state-based decision. So it is up to the states to enforce, and because the infection rates may be higher in New South Wales than they are in Victoria and vice versa, it was important to give the state premiers enough flexibility so that they could start considering whether some activities might be less restricted in a few weeks' time. The sense I get here in Canberra is that there is an abundance of caution, and I'd be very surprised if they were advocating for looser restrictions. They've got to buy time expanding the intensive care capacity so that it can meet even that lower forecast scenario of infections here. And once they do that, and once we have the intensive care capacity across the public and now private hospital network, which have basically joined forces, then I think is the moment at which we would start to see restrictions being eased, because we would have the capacity to care for people who might become more seriously ill. But it's not until that point, and I don't think that point is going to arrive for the next 2 to 3 months at least. And then it's about basically scaling down the restrictions that we've had seen implemented over the last couple of months.
It is a bit of a light at the end of the tunnel watching Wuhan open up again, as our China correspondent in waiting, who is marooned in Canberra, Eric. Wuhan has been in an extraordinary lockdown. They were literally welding people's doors shut and hoarding up buildings since early January. Watching them come out of it now, there is some sense of optimism that, you know, things can change.
Yeah, it's incredible. And to think, you know, after nearly four months of living in, you know, much, much more serious lockdown measures than really we've had to deal with here in Australia, you know, as you say, that is people really literally confined either to their apartments or the apartment compounds. It's extraordinary to see people now coming out to the street, eating at noodle restaurants. And in some ways, people are, you know, some China watchers are concerned, really, that perhaps the vigour with people have taken to easing of the lockdown may, of course, spark another round of infections. But I think it's safe to say that the Chinese authorities are probably unlikely to gamble a widespread infection and another and have to institute another lockdown if they don't believe the virus has been suppressed in that area, despite the misgivings we might have about their actual infection rate. So it's undeniably positive news. There's Australians who have been stuck there in Wuhan since December, basically unable to move, and they are now planning how to get home to Australia, you know, through commercial flights, working their way out of Hubei province, and are finally going to be coming home. These are the people who missed out on the Christmas Island flights. They missed out on the Darwin quarantine, and now, you know, I think offer some really incredible insights into how society changes for the months that it is in lockdown, and it's going to be really important to see what we can learn from that, and how effective these lockdowns can be in suppressing this virus, which, you know, it remains, you know, in some ways an unknown quantity around the world.
I'm sure all governments will be watching what happens in Wuhan very closely. Eric, thanks again for joining me on Please Explain.
No worries.
Today's episode of Please Explain was produced by Anu Hasbold and Amelia Maguire. The journalists, editors, photographers, producers and tech team at The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald are working tirelessly at the moment to cover the COVID-19 crisis factually, fairly and comprehensively. For coverage you can trust, visit our websites or buy our papers. To support our journalism, you can subscribe via our homepages or just search, subscribe, The Sydney Morning Herald or The Age. I'm Tori Maguire. Thanks for listening.